I was telling you about my, you know, personal values around housing, how over the last year or so, I've gotten involved more in the advocacy related to housing, how it's opened my eyes to being so fundamental to so many of the human rights issues that we struggle with today. And yesterday in Toronto, we saw that 26 people were arrested at Toronto's Lamport Stadium Park, where the city and the police forcibly evicted those living in encampments. Here's what that sounded like if you missed it. Here's what it sounded like yesterday in Toronto when police clashed with these protesters. And you might be asking yourself, why did this happen, right? Why, on both sides, why are the individuals in these encampments refusing to leave? Why are they not wanting to seek shelter in a shelter or another form of temporary accommodation? And why, on a political and policy level, were the police greenlit to be so assertive? And let me be clear, this is not just a Toronto story. Now, I sit here in Calgary. This is a story, you know, in many ways of several things triangulating: health, human rights, housing, political leadership. And to join me in the conversation, I want to bring in Dr. Nahid Dusani. He's a palliative care physician and health justice advocate. He's one of the most articulate and passionate voices on this. Oh, Dr. Dusani, how are you doing? And thank you for joining me.
Thank you so much for having me on, Zane. Really appreciate it.
Listen, you know, and I call you Dr. Dusani. I know you well, so I'm going to use the first name not as a sign of disrespect, but as a sign of being able to do what we do here, which is talk openly and honestly. And one of the things you've talked openly and honestly about, if I can say, is drawing that relationship between health and housing, between social justice, health, and housing, if I can say. And so before we get into the specifics, do you mind just jumping in and kind of giving our listeners an understanding from your perspective, that intertwined relationship between those three things?
Absolutely. And first of all, you can call me by my first name anytime. We're all friends. I will say that, you know, it's important for listeners to recognize that people experiencing homelessness in Canada are arguably Canada's sickest subpopulation. This is a population that's 28 times more likely to have hepatitis C, 5 times more likely to have heart disease, 4 times more likely to have cancer. Mental health rates are higher as well. And actually, the average life expectancy for people who experience homelessness in this country ranges between 34 and 47 years old. They die at a rate that's 2.3 to 4 times higher than you and I. So we're talking about people who are very sick at baseline from physical and mental health and live every day on the edge where they're at risk of their life ending.
And that's super helpful as we talk about this story in Toronto, which kind of begs a question for me. You know, I hope we can collectively agree that these encampments are perhaps not the safest places for folks to live, especially with COVID still raging, despite what some of our politicians and political leaders across the country may want us to think. COVID is still very much here. So in your perspective, from what you see as being a physician on the ground there, why are people not leaving or refusing to leave these encampments?
Yes, I think sometimes arguments around this really focus on, the city, you know, did XYZ to provide supports. And what you really have to do is dig deep into what those supports look like. On a daily basis in a city like Toronto, it is actually very difficult to get individual accommodations during a pandemic that are safe. Also, at a system-wide level, the capacity really is not there to support people in these settings. You can get access to congregate settings indoors, but as we know, COVID is likely an airborne disease. And so what that means is that people are being put at risk. We also have to start believing lived experiences on the ground. The people I care for who live in encampment communities tell me it is not safe to go into these spaces. And therefore, I do not want to go into these spaces. I feel safer living in the park than living in the place that the city is handing to me. That says a lot about the conditions that are needed to support people and the fact that we need to start investing in high quality and affordable housing to solve this issue.
Yeah, you know, I'll get to the housing in a second, but you brought something up there that kind of tweaked a thought, which was in the past, and I believe in the very recent past, you've kind of called this, if I can paraphrase, a criminalization of poverty. What do you mean by that?
Across the board, whether it's tickets for panhandling or the vivid, violent, graphic scenes we saw yesterday at Lamport Stadium and have seen at Alexandra Park and Trinity Bellwoods, this is the criminalization of poverty. We now have three incidents where the city of Toronto has created paramilitary operations, sent hundreds of police, plainclothes officers, horses, surveillance vans, facial recognition technology, and drones just to remove, you know, a set number of people, about 60 or so people from these three parks. What we're seeing as a growing trend is the growing criminalization of poverty. Poverty is the result of the decay in social supports for people around physical health, around housing, around social assistance at the regional, city, provincial, and national levels. And if any one of us could actually become homeless at any time. And what we do instead of supporting people is we further criminalize them and target and attack them. And this is what the criminalization of poverty looks like.
You know, the numbers are staggering, right? Like the 235,000 homeless in a year, the 35,000 any given nights. But you bringing up this point about the paramilitary style operation, you know, my jam is, unlike you, as much as my parents hate it, I'm not a doctor. I don't look at this through. By the way, would it matter? Because I'd call you, someone would probably call me by my first name on a radio show anyways. But, you know, I'm not a doctor. I view this through the political lens. And from the political lens, this makes no sense whatsoever, right? Like you look at this and the images and the audio clip I played just before teeing you into the conversation, that doesn't help. That doesn't help from a visual perspective. It doesn't help from a sort of a political traction perspective. Also, from a policy sense, it makes zero sense because we're then having, as we know, as we have seen, it does not take a large amount of mental gymnastics to understand that this will lead to another encampment, that people will kind of protest and house and find other ways to make their point through another encampment. So even the costs financially that a city has burdened to make this happen, to get these poor, you know, sort of PR outcomes, these poor policy outcomes, is going to just lead to more and more of this, while that could be investment, time, resources, capacity placed into something bigger, grander, and perhaps, more solutions focused, like housing, as you were mentioning.
Absolutely. You know, when it comes to political strategy and thinking around that, I often listen and tune into you, Zane. But now that I'm actually on the call with you, I will reflect on the fact that I often think about the fact that it's not clear to me what the political strategy is from a public relations and communications perspective from the city of Toronto, from the mayor, from councillors that have gone on to support this. This is an international scandal. The world is watching the city of Toronto and seeing how the city of Toronto is treating those who are most oppressed, those who are most marginalized and vulnerable, and saying, what are you doing? The other piece is it's hard not to think about the cost of, you know, the police officers, the vehicles, the technology, the operations, the hours behind it, like the planning behind it. If we had just invested that into housing, what would be possible? I think yesterday's events also bring up the time-old issue that we need to continue to talk about, is the fact that we need to reflect on whether, you know, we really want to be investing in policing moving forward. You know, yesterday's events are a great, affirmation that we really need to, you know, think about defunding the police and reallocating those funds to housing, social, and health programs for our communities.
I appreciate it. Dr. Nahi Dasani, palliative care physician and health justice advocate. Thanks, my friend.